The Sunday Baroque podcast is made possible by WSHU and the Friends of Sunday Baroque. You can find out more about the Friends of Sunday Baroque and find out how to become one yourself by visiting our website, sundaybaroque.org, under the Contact tab.
Matthias Malta is an internationally acclaimed, award-winning musician, a virtuoso recorder and flute player. He's also a conductor and composer, and he has earned many awards for his work in all of those areas. And he joined me in the studio to chat about his international career as a musician. What a treat to meet you in person.
Well, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, I have to begin with this nickname, the Wild Man of the Recorder. I want to give you a chance to get that out of the way and explain what that is all about.
Well, I have to admit, I wasn't aware of that name. Anyway, whatever it might mean, for me, the recorder always, from the very beginning, was an instrument that I tried to express myself. And I think a recorder often has been taken as an instrument that is actually not able to be like to any kind of profound music making. It's actually quite interesting when you apply historic techniques from like the 16th century, including like strong dynamic differences, contrasts, and the virtuosic playing that you can actually do on recorder. It all ends up to be a quite extraordinary instrument with many, many solistic possibilities, potential that is little known. And I think the moment of surprise when you actually show up and you people just don't expect a recorder to be able to sound like that, or like, you know, all these shades, these colors, and that extremely, if you have sophisticated ways of playing the instrument, you can surprise people a lot. And to be wild, I take it as a big compliment in a world where classical music has become something like a little bit in the middle of the road, and we're very much prone to accept the limits of well-behaved music making that is perfect and has as first aim to be perfect, faultless, without any mistakes and stuff. But music in the very at the core is something that should be relating to ourselves and what we are, what we want to be. And so I first of all try to find a way where I can find myself in the music, whatever that is. And if that makes the recorder a wild instrument or myself a wild man on the instrument, I'm happy to go for it.
So you're willing to take chances, and you really do. You take some wonderful chances.
What I like most when I, for instance, when I work as a conductor, 2 years ago, we had a concert with Monteverdi's music, and it did not really quite work out in the dress rehearsal, but I told the musicians the music is so incredible. We sort of have to make it up in the concert and to improvise on it to create what it really means. It's a very, we had a very profound piece at this very point. And so the dress rehearsal was just not really acceptable. But from the professional point of view, it turned out that the concert was incredible because musicians sort of went beyond their conventions and their habits. And at that very moment, you get something that you often don't quite get in classical music when you just stick with the convention of doing the right thing at the right moment. And if you want to have more, you have to actually to find ways that allows musicians to go there, and also for yourself. So for me, the first aim of whatever music you make is to get transformed by the music. So you end up at the end of the concert and you feel something has changed within yourself. Whatever it is, it's hard to put your thumb on that, but it makes you feel alive, and it makes also music will spring alive at this very moment.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that also that spirit of improvisation and being in the moment and really putting your spirit into it and becoming part of the music? Isn't that really very much what a Baroque era musician would have done? They wouldn't necessarily have stuck so rigidly to the page. They would have added their embellishments. They would have added their feeling of the moment.
They certainly do. It's been quite a move in the last 40 years to develop all this historically informed performance practice movement. And we could say that today we have also sort of a well-established tradition. And sometimes I wonder what we can indeed offer the young generation, where they could go beyond what we did, which I think is important for music world and also for the music itself to stay alive. And so we often say that yes, in Baroque music you have that, and yes, you have it, but because it's such a almost a convention, I think you have to still keep pushing yourself to find new ways of transforming a melody with ornaments or new compositions. Or like I myself find a lot of inspiration by confronting early music with music from different centuries, which is quite normal as a recorder player, but it's less usual if you do it on a bigger scale, like with my ensemble, some Caprice, when we put Shostakovich in dialogue with Bach, and ideas like that, that actually just shed a new light on music that we already know. So in some ways, I think it should go beyond ornamentation. It should go into improvisation. So with Caprice, we'll put up an opera this year in the summer where Baroque music is actually confronted with improvisation in contemporary style in the same performance. Ideas like that that mm-hmm. keep our minds open.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that you brought up the Brandenburg recording where you've juxtaposed him with the preludes from Shostakovich. What is the concept behind that connection? What was the motivation for that?
The idea was that Shostakovich knew when Shostakovich went to Leipzig in the 1950s as adjudicator on a panel for in a piano competition. He, for the first time in his life, heard Bach's Welttempered Clavier. And he got so inspired that he wrote a collection on his own, covering all 24 keys with preludes and fugues, just like Bach did. And he incorporated a couple of elements of the Baroque language into his own language, which makes for a very special mix. And so I took a couple of those of preludes and one fugue, arranged them for a Baroque orchestra, for a Baroque band, in a way that actually is quite close to the Brandenburg Concerto that it precedes, that follows the prelude. So you get sort of a dialogue, a direct dialogue between Shostakovich and Bach. And I thought it's neat because in some ways it reflects what I think early music should always do, that we can involve our point of view, our present day point of view, even if we express it by means of early music that has been composed hundreds of years ago. So that seemed to be like a direct, straightforward way to incorporate our own point of view into that idea.
Mm-hmm. When you do play contemporary music, and you also compose music yourself. What is your music like, your compositions?
That's a very good question, because I have the privilege to not have to change music history, which means I never grew up in the circles of contemporary composers, which means I can do whatever I want to. So what I did is I wrote in all different kinds of styles just out of pure interest to sort of learn the style and to be able to speak actively in the style. It's like language when you listen or hear something you understand, but then to find a way to speak it, it's different. Your brain works differently. So that my first intention was to sort of get my neurons in my brain active in all different kinds of styles. So I learned a lot about music in that way. Turned out that it was came in quite handy, because often I could use it for my own programs in whatever contemporary style, electronic music, Baroque style. Now these days we prepare a opera Montezuma by Vivaldi. Two thirds have been lost. So I recomposed the lost parts in Baroque style, but will actually add contemporary pieces in between that I will write myself. So you move back and forth, and hereby I sort of do exactly what I'm trained to do, which is working in different styles.
Yeah. As a player, do you have to approach playing contemporary music differently from playing Baroque and early music? In other words, you know, are there different techniques or different devices, for example, that you might use in one but not the other?
There are. However, in my own life as a musician, there has been one center of interest throughout all different kinds of styles, which is to find like a storyline within a piece. So a piece should be more than an abstract concept. It should always be relating to something like fiction in literature, where you feel like it starts somewhere at point A and you go to point Z, and there's all kinds of adventure will happen on that way, and you just hope you will arrive at some point, and sort of the relief when the end of the piece approaches, which is like a normal reaction in classical music. Mm-hmm. So this has always been something that I thought was very important to discover in pieces of whatever style, but then also to find a way to communicate it on stage when you play it and perform it.
Now, you are not just a recorder player, but also a flutist and a Baroque flutist. And I'm wondering if you would talk a little bit about the kinds of instruments that you play and the difference between them, because I think people are not always clear about the difference.
Well, actually, as a kid, I was lucky because I grew up with a recorder and violin, and I still play Baroque violin when I have to, but I'm actually not very good. But the flute, Baroque flute, came later, and it's a different instrument because it's all from wood, it's conical, and every sound has like a different vowel, which makes it different from the modern flute, which has always the same kind of color throughout the instrument. But it's, even though you use similar fingerings, the sound production is very different, and it takes quite some training actually to be able to play the instrument. But it has a very dynamic quality from the start, because the sound production is less direct than on the recorder. So again, for me, that was like the violin turned out to be. The flute also was a big inspiration for my way of playing the recorder, because whatever you can do in one instrument, you want to have the same kind of advantage on your own home turf. And so I tried to incorporate as many of those possibilities into my recorder playing. And so what I like doing is to create as many shades of color, dynamic, and a drama on whatever instrument I play. And the same applies to the situations when I'm in charge as a conductor.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever play and conduct at the same time? In other words, lead while playing the flute or recorder?
Depends on the size of the group and the repertoire. Mm-hmm. Then 2 weeks ago, we did James Hewitt, a military sonata, the Battle of Trenton, with 11 players on stage, and I was actually conducting from the flute. Mm. But we have done a big deal of the big repertoire, oratorio, and orchestral stuff, where you just simply have to deal with as a conductor, which I like a lot, because you get all the energy seems to end up right where you stand in the center as a conductor. So it's always a big privilege to be in that position.
I did invite some Sunday Baroque listeners on Facebook to submit some questions. And since we're talking about the sound production and the instruments and whatnot, I thought I would throw this one out to you. This is from a listener named Bruce Miller. And I'm guessing, I don't know this for a fact, he didn't say it, but I'm guessing that he may be a recorder player himself, because he asked a very sort of nuts and bolts question about articulation. And he said, do you say do or to when you're playing a note?
See, you get all these experts asking, which is great. Well, actually, in regular early music articulation, it would be quite soft, because if you use an explosive consonant, it might distort the sound. However, in contemporary music, it's often used. And I would say it depends on the dramatic quality of the sound that you want to produce, but the general rule would be the thumb rule, would be a soft do rather than t articulation.
Okay, well, you just gave a lesson, a little masterclass to Bruce Miller. Thank you. another listener, Bradley Clements, asks kind of a broader, more philosophical question, and he wants to know, what can Baroque music of the Americas teach us about colonial indigenous relations in that era?
We have to look into South America at this point, because this is where in the 16th and 17th century quite some exchange actually happened due to the political situation. So the mix between Spanish influenced indigenous music making and actually African influence due to the tragic situation that poor black Africans were forced to come do for forced labor to South America, you find pieces that where those three different influences actually converge in as early as 16th and 17th century in South America. And it's actually quite touching to see that beyond all these tragedies, in some ways, culture seems to be a space or a place where it can all come together and create a new kind of sound and life, actually, that has not been there before. So we did a project, that CD that has been released, it's called Salsa Baroque, that brings together a lot of that music, among other things. The first polyphonic piece that has been published in 1630 in Peru, which is composed with European harmonies, however it uses an Indian language as text, which is also quite a particular moment when you feel like here different cultures come together. And of course, it has an impact on music making. So what it shows is that despite the politically overpowering force coming from Europe, there was some kind of exchange going both ways. And I think it's very important to underline that exchange that is possible culturally, even though politically it's, of course, not an ideal situation.
So you spent a lot of time listening to music and researching and preparing and practicing, but what about fun? What do you like to listen to for fun? Do you listen to other kinds of music besides classical music?
I do. I have two young children, and so it turns out that they're most interested in pop music. These days, Scorpions, they score very high.
Really?
Yes. And I try to convert them to like Mumford and Sons and stuff like that. But so, because actually at this point, I listen mostly to music when I'm sitting in the car.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out that either you depend on the radio, which is a great thing to have, or to a very limited selection of CDs. So it's either random or a very small selection that is at my disposal at this point.
Do the kids listen to your performances?
They're 7 and 5, and they are exposed to music at home. At this point, they are not coming to my concerts often, but sometimes they do. Actually, at this point, it's rather we, the parents, go to their concerts because they learn some cello and violin at this point.
Uh-huh. So, but you're not teaching them yourselves?
No, we're not, no.
Okay.
Just practicing at home.
So what kind of projects do you foresee in the future for you, for Ensemble Caprice, for any other projects you're involved with?
We start a sort of an exciting year of bringing together early music with contemporary music. And Montezuma will be, the Vivaldi opera will be a great start. And then we will set up the first series of the Beethoven symphonies on played and paired instruments in Montreal, like over the next couple of years. And we try to reach out into the world of opera and oratorio, but like bringing also always like our approach to the music, which means we try to not to reconstruct, to have as a basic work principle the reconstruction of like a museum. We want to do it in a way that makes clear that there's a strong connection between music from the past and our own point of view. So we try to settle in between the past and the future, so to speak, and that's a very exciting spot to be.
Well, I cannot wait to hear what your next project is. That Montezuma sounds fascinating. Wonderful.
Yeah, it's really quite exciting because it opens up a world that has, it's not just bringing to life something that has been lost. It's also bringing to life something that it seems to be, it's unknown at this point how it will be. So we'll have projection on the walls, mm-hmm. and all kinds of interesting contemporary elements that will really bring a new mix to that music.
And will this also be recorded at all, either DVD or CD?
We don't plan a CD at this point, but it will certainly be a DVD, and we'll put excerpts on YouTube and on our website for sure.
We'll be looking for those. Well, Matthias Mata, what a treat, what a wonderful honor to be able to speak with you. Thank you very much.
Likewise. Thank you. It's been fun to be here.